Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate and way out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now soon to be. We are now in Boston, Massachusetts. We operate under a different name there, ERA Key Realty Services. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that is guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, no cost, no risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash because you have a mortgage commitment. A lot of talk about cash purchases these days and their impact on a competitive situation when there's more than one offer on a particular listing. And given the shortage of listings, you want to make sure that you're as competitive as possible. And that pre-purchase commitment is the best way. Because in my mind, it's even better than cash because you're at least somewhat protected by virtue of an appraisal. And we've been having some issues lately when we have these bidding wars on houses and a house will sell for well over the list price. And then we only find out later on that the house doesn't appraise. And then we've got a problem with the financing if that is involved in the transaction. And it creates a little difficulty. And so I encourage you to find out upfront not just what you qualify for, but what you can actually be committed for and actually get that commitment and walk into the market competing with those that buy with cash. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700 for personalized, customized, what we like to call knock your socks off service, and check out that low rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now in Boston. Simply dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about. We do have local numbers, so that's in Western New York. No matter whose listing it is, just the street number, that's all you need to know. And the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property, all automatically and just that fast. It's even faster than turning on your computer and going to a website. It's that fast. Anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers, only service of its kind in the market. We are in the spring market. It's a very active time in the marketplace. Last month was a record month for us, again, at Hunt Real Estate, and we're very happy about that. But the issue is inventory. Houses come on the market, and they sell very quickly. This is both a good and bad thing. If you're selling, it's a wonderful thing because we're seeing price appreciation, which is a great thing for those of you that own homes in Western New York or own real estate of any kind. But it's also a tough thing when you're on the buy side. So you want to enter the market with as much strength as you possibly can. And keep in mind that the best way to do that is through the seller security plan, which very simply says that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan allows you to effectively buy a home non-contingent. If you've got a home to sell, one of the biggest dilemmas is people want to buy a house, but they've got a house to sell. And what do I do about that house? It's all available for you at 633-9400 or by stopping into one of our many open houses this weekend and asking a Hunt Real Estate agent about this, and they're the only ones that can help you with that. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And the Amherst won last night, I believe, and they're one more regular season game, and they start the playoffs, even behind the NHL. It's kind of interesting. We are live. WBEN 9:30 a.m. We're here in the studio. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is the president of Canisius College, John Hurley. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back. You've been on several times, and it's always interesting, John, to hear your perspective on the college and our community. In our last discussion, we spent quite a bit of time talking about this program that was announced by the governor, I believe, about a year ago, called Excelsior. And you've had a very interesting couple responses from the college. How is that really going, and how has it affected Canisius College and schools like Canisius College, private schools all across the state?
I would say the picture is somewhat mixed. We surveyed the independent colleges, the private colleges in New York State, There are about 110 of those. We had a response from about 80 of those schools. Of the 80, there's some schools that weren't affected by this at all. New York University, Columbia, and Cornell. They're not going to be affected by Excelsior. But there were about 48 schools that relied on New York State students for at least 65% of their class. And in those schools, 30 of those schools saw a decline in their freshman class. And the decline was in the range of about 8%.
Really?
And that was our experience at Canisius. We were one of those 30 schools.
Actual enrolled students was down 8%?
Down 8%.
And that's because when it came down to the wire and a student's choosing between Canisius or another private school and one of the public universities, they go the state route.
It was hard to compete with free tuition. Now we have to keep in mind there are two parts to the cost of attending a SUNY school. There's the tuition part, which is about $6,500. It varies depending on the school. And then there are fees. And the fees at the University of Buffalo, for example, are about $3,000.
That's room and board and that kind of thing?
No, those are fees on top
Just student fees.
Student fees. Mm-hmm. And then room and board is on top of that. And room and board runs another $11,000 or $12,000, depending on the school.
Mm-hmm.
So the Excelsior Scholarship Program only applied to that $6,500 tuition. And so, you know, that was a competitive thing for it, but it didn't address the whole cost of going to college.
But if I'm living at home, if I'm a senior in high school and I live in Buffalo and I want to go to UB or even ECC or school like that, it's pretty much.
If you qualified, yeah, you would pay the $3,000 in fees and that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that was the governor's point to be fair to the governor. He said, you know, to the extent kids want to stay at home, that's what we're talking about, not paying for room and board. The program, as we've talked about in the past, had many conditions, though. If you received the grant, you had to agree to stay in New York for a period of time equal to the time that you got the grant. So if you got it for 4 years while you were a student, you were committed to living and staying in New York for 4 years after graduation. You had to take 15 hours. You had to remain on track for graduation over a four-year period. And I think a lot of those conditions, and then it wasn't available to everyone. This past year, it was families that made less than $100,000. The ceiling bumps up a little bit more this year. Ultimately, when it's fully phased in, it'll be families that make less than $125,000. So with all those conditions, there were about $25,000 grants. Given by the state, costs was about $87-88 million to the state.
That's pretty serious. The issue of private and public education, for that matter, at the college level, has come under a lot of scrutiny these days, and I know you're acutely aware of that and sensitive to it. Among the things that is, I guess, contributing and kind of an offshoot of this whole Excelsior thing is the whole issue of student debt. I believe it's well in excess of $1 trillion in the country today. And one of the criticisms is that often a student doesn't know really what the payment's going to be at the end of their education, so they really don't know what burden they're signing up for. And the default rate is high, and that kind of contributes to the burden on society because somebody has to pick up that tab. So even when people borrow money to go to school, sometimes major source of that money, the government itself, never gets paid back. How serious a problem is this, or is this kind of an issue that is just a lot of talk?
Well, when you roll up the entire picture and you talk about $1.4 trillion, I think there are a lot of misperceptions out there because you have to pull it apart and see where is the debt. At Canisius, for example, the average debt for students who borrow, and not every student borrows, but the average debt for students who borrow is about $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that equates to about the cost of an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And that has remained relatively constant over several decades.
Really?
You come out of college and you've got
debt. The comparison with the cost of a car.
Cost of the car.
Right.
And you're right. You're right that sometimes students and their families aren't quite certain what they're getting into. That's not really a problem at our level. A lot of schools are doing as you do in your industry with home buying seminars to understand how do you take on this financial challenge? Right. We run financial literacy training for students mm-hmm. and their families so that they do understand. Right now, the default rates on student loans at Canisius is the lowest it's ever been. We're in about the 3% range. So what that says to me is, yes, our students have to take on a certain amount of debt, and they get jobs, and they're able to service the debt. And the college education needs to be viewed as an investment in your future, because all of the studies still show that a college education is worth it. Over a lifetime, you will do better financially with a college degree than if you don't have one. And right now, there's a narrative out there that gets going that the landscape is just littered with coffee baristas who've run up $100,000 in debt getting some useless liberal arts degree, mm-hmm. and nothing could be further from the truth. So we don't think that it's a huge problem. There are pockets of problems, and the biggest problem in student debt comes when a student gets partway along the process, starts college,
doesn't finish,
because to use an analogy in your industry, it's like paying a mortgage on a house you never got to live in.
And that is the point of this line of questioning for you, Mr. Hurley, and that is that we often are running in, well, not often, but I would say more than occasionally, we're running into a situation where a young couple will apply for a mortgage, and then they find out that they can't qualify because of a loan that they took out to pay for their education 10 years before. I was asking my guest, John Hurley, the president of Canisius College, about the impact. I was going to ask you about your financial literacy class. And if you advise them about the impact of that student debt on everything they do from that point forward, and how important it is not to default, because one default can goof them up and make it impossible for them to buy a house for a number of years.
Yeah, that's a key part of the financial literacy training. Number one, getting them to understand the magnitude, because I think at least with the sticker price of higher education, there's a certain amount of numbness there,
right,
that people don't fully appreciate the dollars that are involved. And we understand that. I mean, we recognize that, and we're sympathetic to the families trying to make this happen. But at the same time, students have to understand these are not just numbers. They need to understand how does it play out into a total debt at the end of their college career, and then how do they pay that. And it requires a commitment. It means some sacrifice, the way your parents and my parents learned how to sacrifice to make things possible for our family. And sometimes I wonder, in the current generation, do they fully understand what sacrifice means? It means you can't do some things because you have to do other things.
And that is the truth. And that goes to a really important concern of mine, I guess, about all education, and that is its real cost versus what people pay, and how our society becomes conditioned to education being free. We're entitled to that. That's become a right in this country today. Yet many people opt for a private education that's very costly, where you're getting closer to its real cost. But even then, well, let me step back for a second. The private schools today, all the private schools, whether church related or secular schools, no matter what the condition, it's almost impossible to pass the entire cost on to the student. So every school, whether it's public or private, depends on a subsidy from someplace. The biggest subsidy obviously comes from the government. You function kind of on the periphery of that world, in schools like Canisius. Tell us the dynamics, the various pieces that make it possible for you to deliver an education at all.
Yeah, that's a great observation, Peter. So in a financial aid package that a student at Canisius might see, and right now there are probably a lot of listeners out there whose child is going through this, the last weeks of trying to decide.
That's right.
Where are they going
to
school?
That's why I wanted you on the air today.
So,
I think this week, maybe today and tomorrow and Monday are like the key days for many schools.
That's right. And we're on the phones and we're working this weekend.
So thanks for being here. I know you got other things that are important to do today.
But the federal Pell grants are important. The maximum Pell grant is just over $5,000.
Now, you know, let me just go back to Excelsior. Excelsior is a last dollar program, like Say Yes and other programs.
Yes.
So explain that a little bit.
Well, okay, so there are
You start with a Pell grant, but you're working up towards the last dollar.
Right. So there are federal grants and there are state grants. So Pell is available to students. Income levels are generally set very low. But at Canisius, 37% of our freshmen will be Pell eligible.
Wow.
So that's a very needy that's a needy population that we have to work with to make the whole education available. So Pell is about $5,000. The tuition assistance program in New York is has a maximum grant of just over $5,000. So maximum TAP and Pell for the neediest students in New York to together would be about $11,000. So at a place like Erie Community College, where you would have a lot more students with real financial need, they'll have their entire tuition covered by TAP and Pell. And at Buffalo State, that would be the case too, a lot of students. And then Excelsior would be last dollars in, to the extent that, you know, there's a sliding scale based on family income as to how much you're awarded in TAP and Pell. But if you still had some need on top of that, Excelsior would be last dollars in. In addition to that, there are some special kinds of programs for special populations that, I mean, they're not generally available. But Federal Work Study is another program that we use extensively at Canisius to fund the college package. But the biggest piece is the college's financial aid. This mm-hmm. is money that we put forward. So
The scholarships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of that is merit-based. It's based on how well you did, what your SAT scores, what your high school average was, whether you're an athlete. We've got some other specialty scholarships. And then a lot of it is need-based. The family files the FAFSA form, and then we make a determination as to what the need is, and then we award additional aid. And we try to put a package together that helps the family to make a wise choice. There is often in those packages some level of debt. There's subsidized loans on the federal level, and then there are unsubsidized loans. And those are the loans, when you start to put those packages together, where you have to do some counseling with a family and with a student to understand this is the obligation that you're taking on. Why does the loan part grow over time? And it has grown over the last 10 years. Because TAP and Pell have more or less flatlined. Government support has flatlined for higher education. And the cost continues to go up. I don't think it's gone up exponentially, but it's gone up.
Well, and this is the criticism. They point at schools like yours and say you're too expensive. You're driving your costs up. The kids are only really in class a few hours a day, and they're out, you know, sitting around drinking coffee and thinking deep thoughts. But they're really on an extended 4-year vacation. That's the low level, in my mind, ignorant criticism of education today, higher education.
Yeah, people look at the sticker price and they'll say it's too expensive, but. We always stress, you got to look at the net price that students actually pay, and the net price is considerably less than the sticker price. And as you know, last fall, we went through a major tuition reset. We dropped our tuition by the sticker price by $8,000 and brought it back to what it was prior to 2008. And that was an effort to get the sticker price closer to what the price is that families will actually pay. But this perception that college education costs are out of sight, I mean, some of the people who are complaining the loudest are responsible for passing regulations on colleges and universities that have only the cost of complying with federal regulation is somewhere between 5% and 11% of your operating budget. And I'm not sure that adds a whole lot to the quality of the experience for the student.
I know only too well. I hear what you're saying. We're going to come back after the break, but I want you to talk about that gap that you talked about that the college effectively fills through scholarships. Most schools internally call that the discount rate. And I want you to talk about how quickly that's really increasing and how it has increased. Being on the board I've been on the board two schools, and I've watched that change over the years. It's rather shocking. And I want to hear what Canisius is, if that's a proper word.
Yes.
The possessive of Canisius is Canisius.
Yeah. Well, the traditionalists would tell you S apostrophe S. So right. Canisius is right.
And we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these important messages.
The Buffalo and Erie County Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness presents the 34th Annual Awards Dinner on Thursday, May 3rd at 6 p.m. at Salvatore's Italian Gardens, recognizing volunteers, community agencies, health providers, and others who support the mission of NAMI to improve the lives of families and their loved ones afflicted with mental illness. To purchase tickets to NAMI's 34th Annual Awards Dinner, May 3rd at Salvatore's Italian Gardens, go to NAMIBuffaloNY.org. NAMI, assistance, education, and support for the mentally ill.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. We're going to move through our normal break here a little quicker than usual because we've got a couple callers on the line, and we do have the situation in the Middle East that we're going to be hearing about shortly as well. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700, and find out about the many exclusive programs we have for you there, including the pre-purchase commitment, and also the buy the before and live the after. It allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, knowing exactly what you're going to be in for when you buy that old house, and you can know what it's going to cost to fix it up and move into a finished product, which is a nice thing to be able to do. I'm in the studio today with John Hurley. Mr. Hurley is the president of Canisius College. And John, we've got a couple callers online that have been waiting patiently. Our first caller is John from Buffalo. John, how can we help you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, how are you?
Good, good. Well, Mr. Hurley, regardless of what the students are paying, that is quite a sticker price. It's all upwards of 50 for these private schools, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown way past the rate of inflation for probably 30 years. It begs the question, are you guys making any real effort to control these expenses? You have college professors teaching two classes a semester. That's a six-hour work week, 7 months a year, probably making upwards of 80 plus an unholy amount of benefits. I mean, there just seems to be all kinds of room for cost cutting and making guys work 40-hour work weeks and everything else to try to control this. I mean, theoretically, there are kids coming out of these schools $200,000 in debt with a sociology diploma. I mean, there's no way. You know?
Well, that's possible. I think we've been addressing that, John, but I'll ask Mr. Hurley here to respond to that. I think that's a common thought out there.
Yeah. So, John, there's a lot there in your question, but let me just assure you, over the last 8 years, and this really is since the last 10 years, since the collapse of the financial markets in 08, I think colleges and universities have had to focus on the cost of what they're doing. And some have addressed this with a little bit more urgency than others. I would say at Canisius, there is nothing that I've worked on harder over the 8 years I've been president than looking at our financial model and trying to become as efficient as possible. Because in our case, we know that students pay 92% of every operating expense that we have. And so when I look at an operating expense, I say, I've got to be able to justify this. Is there some value being returned to the student by that? That said, I think there is a misperception out there, and I want to defend my faculty on this. There's a misperception that people are sitting in offices in their tweed sport coats. It used to be they were smoking pipes, but now we don't smoke on campus, and that they're not working very hard. There is a lot involved in our faculty. Spend so much time with our students. That's part of the brand, and it's the thing that contributes to the quality of the education. So, everyone is working very hard, but there's certain things about this industry. It's a labor-intensive industry. Technology doesn't give you a lot of efficiency. It does in some of the back office operations, but it but it doesn't really improve the teaching. We could be more efficient if we had classes of 500 students, but that's not our brand, and that's not for the students that we're admitting. That's not a great education. So there is an expense involved. I would tell you, when you talk about the cost of education, you know, far outstripping inflation, again, we have to come back to the net price that people are paying. And when you look at the net price and the growth in net price over the last two decades, it's in line with other labor-intensive industries like healthcare, like childcare, and things like that. And other industries that have done better have benefited from technology. That's where the gains have been made in productivity in the United States economy. So there's a lot to it with the cost. But I would tell you, I'm not sure that I know of a college president who isn't working on making lowering the cost and bringing in more efficiencies.
And you bring up a very, very important point. The financial crisis that began in the fall of 2008 and really went on for effectively four solid years. I mean, during which everybody had to change just about everything. If you were functioning in that part of the world, which just about everybody was, in one way, shape, or form, either through investments or directly involved in the cost of everything. I don't think people have a clue how much the impact on higher education that whole experience provided for all. It was monumental.
Absolutely.
I was involved with two schools at the time, and it was every day was a crisis. I mean, I think it's the only way to put it. And you had all kinds of projects that were in a queue that all of a sudden stopped. Initiatives that you had been funding went away. And I don't know if there are specific things you can relate to from that experience, but I know a severe impact that people sometimes, now that we're so-called past it, they forget about.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the private schools, we saw a great increase in the amount of financial aid that we had to give to plug that gap.
I'm sorry, but we do have to go to a break now to cover the news from the. Oh, I'm sorry. I just was told we have more time, John.
Okay, great.
So finish that thought, please, if you would.
So at the private schools, because families suddenly had their college plans upended. They were thinking perhaps of borrowing from a retirement plan.
Or their house. Which trashed.
And both of those disappeared. So we had to step in. And at the same time, state governments were just completely decimated. And so the idea of increasing student loan programs or student aid programs at the state level were thrown out the window. So we stepped in and filled a lot of those gaps. And that's where in the private schools you saw this tremendous growth in the financial aid budgets. At the same time, in the state, in the public university sector, the support for public universities flatlined, and there was an incredible pressure to raise tuition. So that's when you saw big increases in tuition at state universities across the country, mm-hmm. because they needed it to operate because they weren't getting the state subsidies. So at every level of higher education, it was a great, great challenge. And yeah, I would say that we've just started to emerge out of it, but as we've emerged out of it in the Northeast, we've experienced a 20% decline in the number of high school graduates in mm-hmm. New York State alone. And the picture in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and Ohio and Michigan is really no different. So across the Northeast, the number of students has gone down, and that's created a tremendous pressure.
We're going to go back to a couple of callers here, John, because I think in my mind I could – ask you questions about just that period of time for the rest of the next 2 hours. But it's because it's really important. People forget about that, especially when they're, you know, day-to-day watching the stock market go do its flips and turns, but especially when it gets as high as it is. But our next caller is Steve from Amherst. Steve, how can we help you?
Okay, guys. What happened in America is the money to educate our kids was called states' rights. The states educated their children and decided how to use this money. When Jimmy Carter became president, he federalized it. When he federalized it, all his political friends made lots and lots of money, and it's with the federal government being involved, it's driving up the cost of education. It's all political, and to top it off, our education continues to drop because the federal government got involved and they can't do anything right, and that's the truth.
Okay. Is that, that's a comment. I'm sure there's a question in there someplace, Steve. So we'll take it as a question. And, John, I know that you're sensitive to the federal government's, the national government involvement in education. How has that impacted places like Canisius?
Yeah, so Vanderbilt University did a study, and they brought together public and private colleges, actually some proprietary colleges as well, across a broad spectrum. I think Hartwick College down in the southern tier participated, and there were about 11 or 12 universities. And they tried to get at this question of what does federal regulation cost a college or university? And that's where I cited before. They couldn't pin it down, but they said it's somewhere in a range, depending on the complexity of the university, of somewhere between 4% and 11% of your operating revenue. Well, you know, if I pick the midpoint of that and say about 7 or 8%, I mean, at Canisius College, we're talking about $4 million just to comply with federal regulation. And there's a part of it that's necessary. There's no question about it. But there's also a part of this that involves an awful lot of record keeping on our part and filing of reports in Washington. And then we know that it requires the hiring of people in Washington to review the reports. And at the end of the day, I don't know that our students are any better educated. I don't know that they're any safer. I don't know that they're any better serviced as a result of this. So when I spend time in Washington, and I'll give him credit, when I've met with Congressman Chris Collins, he's sympathetic that we're doing a tremendous service to the American people in educating young people. We've got to find a way to strike a better balance between the overregulation of education and legitimate interests in making sure that people are doing things the right way. And I should say, this study only dealt with federal regulation. There's a whole level in New York State of state regulation.
I know a little bit about that, and it's shocking when you dig into all these layers of involvement of governmental entities. And I'm not saying that critically. I'm just saying that these are facts of life, and they're not going to go away. And to Steve's point, I mean, it starts and it never stops. And that's one thing I did learn in college.
It's hard to get rid of these things once they get going.
Well, it's interesting. We were talking about this last night, and it's just to look at the continuum. Legislation is created by legislators. Every piece of legislation creates a set of regulations. Every regulation requires a bureaucracy for enforcement. Bureaucracies exist to perpetuate themselves. And so this goes on and on and on and on. So once we do something in a legislative body because we think it's a good idea, there's the law of unintended consequences, which we live with forever with these things. And sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not so good. And you've just defined how it may or may not be so good for higher education. We've got a couple other callers, but before we go to those callers, I want to remind our listeners that, and this is a matter of a question to you as well, our mission on this show is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate in the markets we serve. And the what we're talking about here in terms of the presence of schools like Canisius, if you were, and I don't know if you've even thought about this at the school, but to what extent does the presence of a school like Canisius contribute to the inherent value of a community like Buffalo?
Yeah,
that's a broad question. I know.
No, I know it's a broad question, but Peter, it's generally understood that colleges and universities have three essential purposes. The one is the education of its students and the granting of a degree. The second is the research that's done in by the faculty, and the contribution of knowledge to humanity. And the third is the impact on the communities in which they operate. And we have always taken that third leg very, very seriously at Canisius. So right now, as you know, several years ago, we acquired the old Delavan Avenue Armory site. And it was a building that was in serious disrepair. It was decrepit. And we acquired the surrounding block. And we built over there a townhouse complex, a residence complex for our students. I thought... development would follow in that Linwood-Oxford neighborhood right around that, because there were several good homes there. There were a lot of families living there. And then it didn't happen. Suddenly, in the last year or two, that neighborhood is taking off. I ran into two...
Let me interrupt you. It wasn't you. It was the rest of the world. If you think about when you guys did that, yeah, and what else was going on in the economy, we're out of that now, and look what's happening. Just
and
what
look what's
saying.
Happening, the demand. So we see, for example, on a street like Horton Place, which runs between Lafayette Avenue and Delavan, a house selling for over $300,000, going over the asking price. And when these young guys who renovated this house and sold it told me about it, I said, no, not on Horton Place. They said, yes, on Horton. And I went and I looked it up, and I went by it.
The Severin Brothers, right?
The Severin Brothers. Yep. And now the Severin Brothers, we're working with them to rehab a house on Hughes Avenue right across from the entrance to our driveway. They think we can sell that house for over $200,000 when they get finished with it. And they're buying a vacant lot from us on Lafayette, and they're going to build a new house on Lafayette. And they've already got the buyer lined up for that. So there are and they're not the only ones operating in
That's
that
right.
Linwood-Oxford neighborhood. Right at the corner of Harvard and Delavan, there is two major renovations going on where the houses are being stripped down to the core and new shingles are applied, et cetera. So I'm very encouraged to see that, because where there's an investment in the community, that's going to improve the economic prospects generally. And those kind of things, that's what a college can do. By investing in our own plant, we made some of those things happen.
And I think that's a message that doesn't get out there often enough.
The Buffalo and Erie County Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness presents the 34th Annual Awards Dinner on Thursday, May 3rd at 6 p.m. at Salvatore's Italian Gardens, recognizing volunteers, community agencies, health providers, and others who support the mission of NAMI to improve the lives of families and their loved ones afflicted with mental illness. To purchase tickets to NAMI's 34th Annual Awards Dinner, May 3rd at Salvatore's Italian Gardens, go to namibuffalony.org. NAMI, assistance, education, and support for the mentally ill.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today. If you're interested in the value of your home or any property, we have not one but three algorithms there that will allow you to take three different technical looks at the value of any piece of real estate. And if you know the condition, there's a little bar that allows you to slide the condition back and forth to see how improving a home, or if it is already in good condition, how that directly affects the value. And this is fairly sophisticated science. Now, the only thing that is missing there is the actual somebody looking at your house and interpreting that data, which is what a real estate agent, a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent, is there to do. So once you look at that, you might have questions, or you should, and you want someone to help you interpret that. And that's the time to call Hunt Real Estate ERA at 633-9400 and find out how you can have someone come in and help you interpret that data. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment, and that can be reached at 633-3700 today. I'm in the studio today with John Hurley, the president of Canisius College. And John, we've struck a nerve out there in the public about a whole bunch of things relative to education. But you were, before the break, really making, in my mind, an extremely important point, and that is the three kind of reasons for being for a school like yours, the third one being its impact on the community around you. Is there a way for you to to put that in some kind of dollar terms? Because I know you have to go out and raise money. And one of the things that I know that is impactful for people, for donors, is kind of a return on investment for the community. Do you think about that when you go out and you solicit funding, or is it just we've got a program, or we want to build a building, or we want to do this, or we want to do that?
No, we just issued recently, Peter, our community impact report, and this is a you know, a lot of times we're moving printed pieces online, but this is actually something we've invested in, a printed report. There are lots of ways of measuring the impact. We look at the economic impact. What's the direct spend in salaries and other direct expenditures by the college? When we're doing construction projects, how does that ripple through the local economy?
Mm-hmm.
What I used to say to the mayor and others in the city, you know, when you look at faculty jobs at a university, those are permanent jobs. People come and their goal is to get tenure and mm-hmm. and to build a lifetime career. And these are the kind of people who buy houses, who contribute to the vitality of their neighborhoods. They attend the Philharmonic. They join clubs. They're active in their church. I mean, this is all good stuff for a community. But then we also look at service hours contributed by our students across a wide range of things. We look at, and you're aware of the employer-assisted housing program that we've been running mm-hmm. for many years.
It's a great program.
The number of houses that people buy. So we're measuring this in lots of different ways. I will tell you, every time we send that report out and I run into elected officials who receive it, they say, great stuff. This is what we need everyone in the community to be focused on. What is our contribution back to the community?
In my mind, that's huge. In many cases where there's a private school or generally in these small towns all over New York State, they're the largest employer. Although they don't pay taxes, they almost always make significant payments in lieu of taxes in many different forms. And they are the economic engine of these communities. And we can be critical of higher education and its cost, but if we dig deep like you have, and I want to get a copy of that report. I think that's a great thing, and everybody should read that, and every school should do one so that they can help to put this whole cost of higher education into its real perspective. We're going to take one more call. John, we have a bunch of people waiting, but this Jay has been waiting the longest. And Jay, how can we help you?
Hi. I have a question for Mr. Hurley here.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done any analysis on the cost benefit for scholarships, athletic scholarships I'm talking about, that the school gives out? And I guess my point, I'll be real quick, is have you ever thought really about making the scholarships or the aid, the sports programs, more local orientated rather than giving scholarships to people who are far from the area? Because my belief is that the kid who gets a scholarship participates in a sports program, athletic events at the school, and ends up living here is going to be much more supportive of the school, a return on investment down the road decades later. And I just wonder, is there an analysis of outside the area scholarships versus inside the local area?
Interesting question.
Yeah, that is a great question. I would say at our level, we play in Division I, so we're like the University of Buffalo and St. Bonaventure and Niagara. We're all Division I. So at our level, we only have two full scholarship sports, men's and women's basketball. And those are, you're right, we are recruiting from a wide geographic area to find student athletes for those programs because we're playing in a very competitive conference. With that said, I think the coaches in those programs have always been sensitive to local talent and making that a priority. So we do that. The rest of our programs, they're not full scholarships, so they're partial grants and aid. We recruit heavily from the local area, but we also recruit out of the area. And I think the one good thing about athletics, it allows us to diversify the student body, and because we're so heavily reliant on New York State, this allows us to bring in kids from California and from Canada and other places. So it's a balancing act, but I don't think there's a coach at Canisius that is not looking at the local schools.
But isn't it true, though, that the fact that you have broadened your geography through sports, among other things, that is a net contributor to our community? We're bringing people in from all over.
It is, and a number of these students do stay. I mean, you know, one of the things that the basketball coaches will, when they're talking to a local athlete, will tell them is, it's good to play at Canisius. You're going to be in the media, and if you want to live and have a career here, we need to look only as far as Tony Mastiello, who became mayor of the city of Buffalo after a great basketball career. And Tony wasn't alone. Up and down the line, Terry Connors, a great local lawyer.
Yep.
You know, there have been all sorts of people who have come out of that Canisius basketball program who've gone on to great things in this region.
And isn't it also true that this whole community, the accounting community, the business community is littered with Canisius graduates? And I don't know if you can even measure that kind of thing.
All I'll say is when my predecessor, Father Cook, was deciding whether to come to Buffalo, Jesuits all around the country said, for a school its size, it casts a big shadow in this community.
John Hurley, president of Canisius College, thank you for being with us this morning. Appreciate all your thoughts, as always, and the good work you're doing at Canisius. I want to thank our listeners. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of Western New York is Hunt Country.